I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. I say tomato, you say tomato. I call it a tag sale, you call it a yard sale. What does the way we speak tell us about where we are from? Joss Katz is a graphics editor at the New York Times. He decided to find out. He developed an online survey to gather data on how Americans talk. He translated responses into vibrant maps of the U.S. showing how Americans speak. His new book is titled Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. Joss Katz joins us from the New York Times. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, we've posted several of Josh's maps at our website, capeandislands.org, so you can see what people across the country call a sale of assorted household items or what they call a freight truck. Again, that's at capeandislands.org to see how your speech compares to other Americans. And I have to say, Josh, we've been having a lot of fun with this book in the newsroom. So when and why did you become interested in how Americans speak?
I mean, I can remember first becoming interested in it way back when I was just growing up. I grew up in South Jersey, outside Philadelphia, and if you know anyone from around there, you'll know that they call what most people call a sub in Philadelphia, in the area around Philadelphia, it's a hoagie. And so I always called it a hoagie. I had friends from New York who called it a sub, and I remember just being fascinated by this idea of where that line was in New Jersey where hoagies became subs.
Right.
And I grew up later on... Oh, yeah, no, go ahead.
And I grew up in Connecticut. It was a grinder.
Right. Exactly. And then later on in college, I came across this old data set called the Harvard Dialect Survey, which was this linguistic survey where they collected data online exploring these different questions. And then later after that, in grad school, I got this idea to try and do a new round of data collection, sort of inspired by that survey that involved this interactive quiz. And at the end, you'd get a map showing where in the country most spoke like you. And then I used that to collect the data that went into this book.
So how did you come up with the survey questions?
So it was a combination of places. Most of them appeared in the Harvard Dialect Survey originally, or in there's this large volume called the Dictionary of American Regional English, which has a series of similar questions. Some of them came from suggestions from friends and family. So it was really a mix of sources.
How many questions are there?
In the complete data set, there's about 140 or so. Not all of them appear in the book, but in the full data is about 140 questions. Yeah.
So how did you determine where on the map survey responses would go? You talked about Jersey in this kind of line. So did you ask participants where they were currently living, or did you ask them where they were born, or both?
Both. I asked them both, and that also helped me take a look at how people's dialect changes over time. I haven't had a chance to explore that fully yet, but I think there's a lot of really interesting potential there.
Yeah, so we're a much more transient society now than even a generation ago. So what happens to our speech patterns as we move?
Well, you see, with a lot of things, it really varies. So, for example, I'm from South Jersey. Now I live in New York. I'm always going to call it a hoagie. Something like that is really going to stick with you because it's really people with some of these dialect variants, they really form a really fundamental part of their identity, and you really associate it with who you are and where you come from, and it gives you this sense of place. With other things that might be less noticeable, you might kind of slowly acquire some of the traits of where you move to.
Yeah,
y'all. Or I've lived in New York for about 3 years now, and in New York, if you are waiting in line for something, like say to get a cup of coffee, you wouldn't say you're standing in line, you'd say you're standing online. Mm. And without even realizing it, I kind of slowly acquired that trait also.
Yeah,
so it's kind of funny how that happens.
Now, can you determine where a person lives just by asking him or her a few questions?
You can, in theory. I can't personally. I'm not quite that good yet. but hypothetically, it can, depending on where you're from, there are few things that can really stand out as a marker of place. For example, if you call what I would call a water fountain, if you call it a bubbler, there's really only two places in the country that do that. One is in parts of eastern Wisconsin, and the other is in Rhode Island, parts of Massachusetts.
All right, so let's get to some of the questions and responses that you have in the book. One is where we throw our trash. How did people respond to that?
Right, so that one is some people would say garbage can, and some people would say trash can. And if you look at the geographic breakdown of those two answers, you can see on the map how garbage can is really in the northern part of the country. So it's strongest in New York City and the area around New York, and then it stretches westward from there through Chicago, Minnesota, all the way out to Washington, where the southern part of the country is more likely to say trash can.
Yeah, and it's interesting because northern New England says trash can. It's so that's sort of that you got this orange stripe there, as you say, through
right.
the New York area, but then
right.
we get up a little farther north and they say trash can.
Yeah, it's one of the more interesting patterns in the book. There's a lot of patterns. You'll see a kind of general north-south thing to it, where the north will say one thing and the south will say another. This is an example of something that's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. I'm going to give our phone number for listeners who want to join our conversation this morning. It's 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Maybe you've got one that Josh hasn't thought of that you can share with us. What you call a group of people, and this is that... you guys, y'all,
yeah.
you all.
So that is one of the easiest ways of telling whether someone is generally from the north part of the country or the southern part of the country, is whether they say you guys or y'all. So that one really stands out. And with a lot of the things in the book, it really varies by question. Some you have this very sharp dividing line where everyone in one region says one thing and everyone in another region says another. With most of the things in the book, it's more of a blend.
Yeah.
Where you'll have a slight majority in one place, we'll choose one, and then a slight majority in the other place, we'll use the other, but you'll hear both variants in both places.
It's interesting because in this one, there's something, yins, I never heard of yins, 1% in this little tiny circle.
That's in Pittsburgh. And that's another example of something that people from that area take a lot of pride in and really use it as a marker of their identity, is that they say yins.
Yeah. And then... on page 64, you have this what we call this vegetable that's similar to broccoli, but it's white, not green. All right, so people are thinking what they call that in their head, right?
And right, that's the idea.
Yeah, cauliflower, right? Cauliflower
well,
or
what
cauliflower?
Would you say?
I say cauliflower.
And I say cauliflower. There we go. Playing to type.
I'm looking at that because, southern half of New Jersey says cauliflower and half says cauliflower.
Right. And so that's one of those examples in New Jersey where you see that North Jersey, South Jersey divide, with North Jersey coming under the influence of New York and South Jersey coming under the influence of Philadelphia. So South Jersey says cauliflower and North Jersey says cauliflower.
And Dan just typed a note. In South California, people say the 405 freeway.
Right.
The 405 freeway. And then you mentioned the bubbler thing, what we drink in school. Some call it a drinking fountain. Some call it a water fountain. And then bubbler.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting. All right. So did you look into the origins of the words we use? For example, why some people use the word sneakers versus tennis shoes, or going back to your hoagie example, why some would call it a hoagie versus a sub versus a grinder?
I try to. So I think that's one of the fun things in the book, is it's not just about how people say different things in different places, which is fun on its own. But I also try to use it as kind of a gateway to exploring some of the ways that some of the words have developed over time. With a lot of them, you will have a lot of theories that people will put forward, and not all of them are always accurate, and a lot of times we don't even know which one is the right answer. Sneakers is an example of that. It's not exactly known who the first person to coin the word sneakers was, but it's thought that at least the reason why we call them sneakers is that before... they came out with these rubber-soled shoes. You know, you had shoes with these hard soles that would make a lot of noise as you walked around. And with that soft-soled shoe, then you could sneak around more easily, and sneakers.
That's funny. So let's talk a little bit how language has changed over time. You use the what we call the insects that glow at night as an example. Over the past century, a part of the country where speakers are more likely to say firefly has expanded. Do you have any idea why one word becomes more prevalent over time? Because I guess in Manhattan, more people are likely to say firefly, while across New York Harbor and Staten Island, people are more likely to say lightning bug. So what might account for people using different terms for the same thing when they're in such close proximity?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different kind of forces in play with something like that. With a lot of words, one word or the other might acquire sort of a little bit more status to it. Like firefly might sound a little bit more refined than lightning bug, and that may have something to do with it. But with a lot of them, we just don't know, and you just kind of watch them evolve. Another example is roundabout. Mm-hmm. It used to be sort of evenly divided. Now, I know in Massachusetts, it's a rotary. Well aware.
A sort of rotary, yeah. Right.
But in a lot of the rest of the country, at least about 50 years ago, it was sort of evenly divided between roundabout and traffic circle. And then over the past 50 years, roundabout has really expanded, and you hear that in most of the country now.
Yeah. When it comes to a state name, is there a right or a wrong answer? For example, some people say Nevada versus Nevada or Colorado versus Colorado.
Sure. I mean, it's hard for me to say that one way is the right way and one way is the wrong way. In general, it's probably best to stick with how the people from there would pronounce it. So with Nevada, since the people from Nevada call it Nevada, it's probably best to
stick
go
with Nevada.
What they say.
Yeah. Well, I have a good example of that. That's something you don't have in the book. And now tell me how you would pronounce this word, S-C-A-L-L-O-P.
Scallop?
Scallop. Scallop versus scallop. And that's a big deal here in New England. We can tell if somebody's from here by just how they pronounce that. And what's interesting is a while back, you know, somebody actually said scallop on the air and we had some complaints about it. So we looked it up. We looked it up in the dictionary. And you know what the funny thing is? Both pronunciations are correct according to the dictionary, but not around here. There's only one way to say it.
And that one's going to have to be in the sequel. I've been slowly compiling this list because everyone will always, I've been getting, you know, calls and emails of people suggesting these new words and phrases to add. So I'll definitely have to add that one.
Yeah, we have to add that one. All right. Let's talk to Isaac, who's giving us a call from Aquinnah. Good morning, Isaac.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Yes. I, living on Martha's Vineyard, I find that there's also some unique words that come up, and I'm wondering how they play into the cultural and the history of this island and its you know, defined or finite geographical location being an island. My family's been here for a while, and I noticed that from some parts there are words that stand out. Hurricane is the only thing that comes to mind right now, but in the small fishing community of Chilmark and Menemsha specifically, where my family's been for a long time, I just feel like there's so much fascination there, and I'd like to see if you know of any work that's been done on or around Martha's Vineyard in terms of the cultural language heritage.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I don't know of any, off the top of my head, of any Martha's Vineyard specific dialect work, although I'm sure there must be some out there. I do know that in general, islands, in the same way that an island will sort of serve as this breeding ground for very interesting and unique kinds of biology, in the same way you'll see islands serve as a breeding ground for very unique kinds of language. So, for example, Hawaii. The English spoken in Hawaii is really nothing like the English spoken anywhere else in the country, just because it comes from this mix of all of these different ethnic groups and nationalities that have kind of migrated through the islands over time.
Mm. And Isaac, did you say hurricane?
Yeah, I did say hurricane.
Hurricane. Yeah. I don't think I've heard that.
Yeah, it's funny. I just hear it around town just by a few folks, but it's there.
That's not in the book either, Josh.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one either.
Another follow-up question really quick is I wonder how you know, similar, or if there's any ties between the language spoken in New England to early, you know, European settlers, and, you know, by, you know, places like Martha's Vineyard, where people have been here, you know, the Europeans have been here since then and stayed here. I'm wondering if there's some, like, you know, lingering similarities, you know, that sure. haven't stayed elsewhere in the country.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks, Isaac.
Yeah, so one thing that you'll see from that, because English speakers first settled on these various places on the East Coast, so you had these early linguistic centers in colonial America where people have been living, or English speakers have been living for, you know, several hundred years and have really had time to define these very localized dialects. So in cities like Boston or New York or Philadelphia, you really will see these very distinct kind of ways of speaking that you don't see quite as much as you move west, where things kind of tend to spread out and blend together a little bit more. So,
very interesting. Thank you very much. Isaac, I really enjoy this conversation.
Yeah. Isaac, thanks for the call. Those were great questions. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Josh Katz about his new book, Speaking American. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Mary is giving us a call from Sandwich. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. I just had a quick question. I was wondering if anyone's ever thought of, like, I grew up over the bridge in Middleborough and on the Cape now, but we were talking about the bubbler and the water fountain, and I was just remembering that, you know, when I was a kid in school, our water fountains looked like a bubbler. You know, they just, like, bubbled up. They didn't
right.
dry. And I'm wondering if maybe the manufacturers of the products we had around also influenced what we said or how we said it. Because these are the ones, you know, shoot across more like a fountain.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I think that would influence, right? Like, some people call sodas Coke, even if it's not a Coke.
Yeah, so that's a great example, and that's a great question. So I know Kohler, who's the manufacturer of some water fountains out in Wisconsin, for a time had argued that they actually invented the term bubbler also, although after some people dug into it, it turned out that that wasn't actually true and it was a myth. And I looked into it to see if anyone had figured out, you know, where this term bubbler had come from, or not so much where it came from, but why it took hold in these two places. And I couldn't really find any conclusive evidence one way or another.
Mm. All right.
But that's a great theory.
Yeah, Mary, thanks for the call. We have an email here from a listener in East Falmouth. I used to work in Wyoming. I was told several times that it was my pronunciation of the word quarter that identified me as Eastern. Are there regional differences in how that word is pronounced?
There are, and that is an example that is actually one of the maps in the book. Now, I'm not sure if I can really reproduce the sound, but there's this. So one version of it has a kind of subtle W to it, so it's more like quarter.
Quarter, yeah.
Versus quarter. I don't know if you can really hear the difference between
quarter,
the two.
Quarter, quarter, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and the latter version, without that W in it, you will see most strongly in kind of eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, parts of Virginia, North Carolina, and you don't see it as much in the West, or in New England, for that matter.
All right, let's talk to Henry, who's calling from East Ham. Hi, Henry.
Good morning, and I'm glad you said East Ham. a lot of people, the Washington
right.
in particular, try to sound Cape Coddy, and they call it East Ham.
That's right.
But, in fact, those of us who live here call it East Ham, so That's the first one.
What's your second one, Henry?
The second one. I grew up in South Central Jersey, and my wife grew up in North Jersey. And if she would meet someone on the street, she would say that she bunked into them, B-U-N-K.
Bunked.
And I would say, well, I bumped into them. And we discussed that for quite a while, and we did our own little research. And we finally came to the conclusion that a bunk was something from Hudson County, which is a northern county in New Jersey. So I was wondering if your author had any experience with bunk versus bump.
That's a good one. Josh?
That is a good one. I had actually never heard of that one before, but that would be a great one to look into.
Yeah, add that to your list. And being from Jersey, and you haven't heard that one.
I know. Right. I mean, for me, it was always bumped into.
Yeah, bumped into. Well, Henry, thanks for that.
And just one more thing. Sure. You were talking about traffic circle and rotary and so forth.
Yeah.
And I in South Jersey,
yeah, for you, it's a circle.
It a traffic circle. And I'm noticing that my GPS that speaks to me is back to traffic circle, so... I don't know if
maybe it's catching on.
Manufacturer that made my GPS put the voice in it, had it say, you know, take the second exit on the traffic circle.
All right, thanks, Henry, for the call. Another good one of pronunciation differences is the word for your parents' sister, spelled AUNT. How do you say it, Josh?
So it's actually interesting. So on my dad's side of the family is from Massachusetts. And my mom's side of the family is from Florida. And the aunts on my dad's side, I would always call aunt. And the aunts on my mom's side, I would call aunt. And I didn't even realize that I was doing that until actually doing the research for the book. And I realized that I would change the pronunciation depending on who I was actually talking.
That's funny that you didn't realize it. I very much realized what I said, because when I was a kid, I called my aunt aunt. And she looked at me and she said, "An ant is an insect. I am your aunt." So I never did it again. We have an email from Mary Ann. She says, "Good morning. How about the boat, that boat that goes to the islands? We have a debate in Boston over ferry versus furry. Furry. Great show. Thanks." So, Mary, did you have that one? Ferry versus furry?
No, I'll have to add that one too.
See, we're giving you all kinds of material for your next book.
These are good.
Margie's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Margie.
Hello. My husband's always loved this sort of discussion, and his favorite is you marry someone, you say Merry Christmas, and my name is Mary.
Hmm.
Have you thought about that?
Josh?
So if I understood the question right, you're talking about the pronunciation of Mary, like the woman's name, Mary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Marriage.
Merry Christmas.
And then Merry, like Merry Christmas.
As you go across the country, they sound very, very similar. You can't really differentiate.
Yeah.
In certain parts of the country, it's Merry, 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 instead of Mary, Mary, and Mary.
Yeah, subtle differences there. But
no,
there
that's
are,
a great example.
Yeah. Margie, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I've got another one from Sean here. It says, "Hi, Mindy. As a wash ashore from Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, we call a snowmobile a snow machine. Didn't even really notice anything wrong with that until coming here, and people would think I was speaking about a machine that makes snow." That's a good one, too. We have another email that says, "Love the show this morning. Wondering about a couple of words. Swimsuit versus bathing suit." That's a good one.
That's a good one.
"A stupid versus stupid." And also, what about wicked? Yeah, that's something we pretty much say around here. Wicked, right? Did you find that anywhere else in the country?
No, that's definitely a Boston and Massachusetts term.
All right.
But I think one of the really fun things in the book, at least for me, when I was researching it, was some things that I said that I didn't even realize were kind of regionally specific, and that I always just assumed were spoken nationally because I never really had any reason to think otherwise. And then I realized that it's not a national term at all. One example would be what I call a tractor trailer. Most of the country calls a semi, mm-hmm. and part of the country calls an 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
And it's a very regional term, which I didn't know.
And that's one we have up on our website if people want to check out that map. All right, so whether or not we pronounce the T in the word often doesn't have a striking geographic pattern, but there is a noticeable effect of age. The younger you are more likely it is to pronounce the T. So what are your thoughts on as to why?
That's a great question, and that one I actually put on the survey just because it was kind of a pet peeve of mine. Because to me, it's always been often, and the audible T version just kind of grates on my ears a little bit. But it's interesting how these different pronunciations and even different words will go through fads. So the one theory about this kind of rise of often is that it's a hyper-correction, so that people get the sense that often is not correct, is not the proper pronunciation of the word, and will kind of go too far in trying to correct themselves and say often. But, I mean, at this point, often is equally as correct, at least in terms of the percentage of people using it, as often.
All right, let's talk to Tom, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I hear you too well, but I'm from Harwich. I grew up in Binghamton, New York, and people there for probably would say they'd shorten it and say probably. So, I mean, my friend went around calling himself that he's Brad Prowley because he's Prowley Brad. And I also spent nearly 20 years on Nantucket, and everyone calls each other Chiefy or Chief over there. And the big curse is Christings. And it's kind of a drawn out, an exaggerated Bostonian accent.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting about the Chiefy. I was just, when you said that, I was thinking in northern Maine, they call each other deer a lot. Did you get that, Josh? Did you hear that?
I mean, I didn't. Yeah. But yeah, that would be interesting to add.
Yeah. I haven't heard the Chiefy, Tom. That's interesting. I have to listen a little more closely when I'm over on Nantucket. Thanks for the call. Paul is calling from Brewster. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I was born in Worcester. And they call it Wista, with an A as opposed to an E-R, as well as I lived in Ohio, and near a town called Worcester with a double O. In fact, we had many a person would say to me, well, where are you from? And I'd say, Worcester. So I appeared to be a local. Also, I picked up something, and I don't know where the heck I picked it up, but instead of saying "so do I,"
oh yeah, yeah,
say "so don't I."
That's right. That's kind of a New England thing, Paul. I was thinking about. I have actually wrote that down. That's not in the book either. But yeah, I didn't realize I said that until I moved to the Midwest, and somebody said, "Yeah, you people from the East always say so don't I." It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
so
I
do not I.
Because I was a traveling businessman, and people would say what?
Yeah. So do not I. Yeah.
I guess I call him.
Yeah. Paul, thanks for that. Those are good ones. Did you know that one, Josh, about the so don't I? Is that something you picked up in your research?
I didn't. And that's sort of the fun thing about the subject is that really it's so deep. You can come up, like you could write an entire book just on the language spoken in Massachusetts alone.
Right.
It's kind of an endless source.
Yeah, and it's tough. It's tough, some of the names of the towns here. If you're not from here, boy, look out. You can tell.
I'm glad you didn't start the show with a quiz on Massachusetts town names.
You'd have really been in trouble. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Joan is giving us a call from Woods Hole. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'm in Woods Hole, and I have a call similar to the fellow from Eastham, and the mine is to do with Wareham or Wareham.
Mm. Yeah. It's Wareham, right? I don't know. Joan. Do you not know the answer?
But there's a wonderful old story about a policeman in Middleborough who was asked for directions from that to that place by a lady who was pretty good looking and a pretty good looking pair of pants. And she said, "Is this the way to wear them?"
Oh.
And the policeman said, "It sure is, lady."
Joan, thanks for the call.
I've got one more.
Okay, go ahead.
Comment. I think that snowmobiles in Alaska are called machines.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, like evidently in Vermont as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Joan, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. There's one that wasn't in the book, Josh, that I was surprised, and that is the word C-O-U-P-O-N.
Coupon.
Yeah. Some people say coupon.
I think that actually is in the
book. Oh, is it? I missed it. I thought I didn't
see
that.
I think so.
Okay.
It's in there somewhere.
All right.
But yeah, so some people will say coupon. Some people will have a bit of a coupon.
Coupon, yeah. and another good one is the word caught. Some people say caught.
Right.
Some people say cot, depending on age. This is another age one.
Right, and so it's this cot versus caught pronunciation, caught like a bed, and then caught as in to catch something. And so the difference between these two vowels, whether you are pronouncing those words the same or different in the past, was sort of an even split. Over time, the areas of the country where they're pronouncing those two words the same has gradually expanded. And I was able to show in the book, kind of chart that over time, over the past few decades, and to sort of just visualize how that merged area of the country has grown. Up till now, it's about 75% of the country will pronounce the two words the same, and 25% will pronounce them differently.
Hmm. Now, as you look at speech patterns, how do you think these linguistic maps might change in the next 50 years?
That is a great question, and it's one of those things that no one really knows the answer to. It's very hard to predict the direction that things will move. The only thing that's really certain is that things will continue to move and continue to evolve. English is a very fluid language, and so it's constantly evolving and adapting, and so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, Isaac called in earlier, and we've got a listener who has a suggestion for Isaac, if you're still listening, a book called Albion Seed by David Hackett Fisher. It's a cultural history of the United States from the earliest English settlements to our time. So Albion Seed, if you're still listening, Isaac. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. If you would like to join our conversation, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Josh Katz about his book, Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. What about digital slang or abbreviations? Does region or age define how we communicate online, or is that just a whole language unto itself?
Kind of is, in a way. I mean, the book tried to focus more on speech, just because I find that more interesting, in a way. But the way that we talk online is definitely kind of an interesting subject to explore. And it's also interesting in that, you know, people are always talking about how they're expecting this regional variation in American speech to fade away because of, well, first they said it would happen because of radio, then TV, and now the internet. Mm-hmm. And it really just hasn't happened. And these regional differences have persisted across generations and appear that they're going to persist for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Let's talk to Fallon, who's calling from Marston's Mills. Hi, Fallon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You might want to turn your radio down if we can sort of hear it in the background.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I was just calling because I am the daughter of an Irish immigrant. And when I got to college, I had no idea that there were so many things that I said completely differently that my friend from home never chose to point out to me. So I say things like a diddly-doo to pick up your room, and a gripper-clipper, which is a hair clip. And I say stupid instead of stupid. So I just thought that those were kind of funny, and I would imagine that they came from my mother, who's from Ireland, but
yeah,
it's interesting to see how they come over.
Did you find that, Josh? Kids who have parents who have immigrated have their own kind of own language for things?
Sure. I mean, your parents, people's parents are one of the biggest influences over the way that people end up speaking. So a lot of people who will grow up in one part of the country, but then their parents are both from another part of the country, will show this blend of the two areas' speech patterns, showing the influence of kind of both their parents and then the people that they grow up around. Mm. And it's the same whether their parents are from somewhere else in the U.S. or whether they're from somewhere else entirely in the English-speaking world.
Yeah. Let's talk to Michael, who's calling from Orleans. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I can't seem to hear you.
Go ahead.
Hi there. My son and I playing out in the backyard with a couple of friends. And he turned, wanted a timeout, is what we would call it. He would say, pause game. And I think that some of the younger generation with their video games and things, and he would say, pause game. Instead
pause game, that's funny. I've never heard that. Pod's game. That's a good one, Michael.
Pod game. Yeah, I think that's the culture creeping in.
Yeah, thanks for that. So that's another one that could be coming from the video games.
That's a great one.
Yeah. Jim is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Mindy. How are you today? Great show.
Thanks.
Hey, Mindy, couple of things. First of all, you beat me to the punch on AUNT.
Uh-huh.
It's a proud son of Syracuse. I'd always pronounce Dan. Yeah. The flat A that you would get in upstate and central New York. Here locally, as a Wash Shore of 33 years, you just come upon these words over on the Vineyard. They have pinko pigs. I don't know if you got into them yet or not. But
what is that? What was it again?
You would know them as peepers.
Oh, peepers. Water. And what did they call them instead of peepers?
They call them pinko tinks.
Huh.
P-I-N-K-L-E-T-I-N-K-S.
Tinkle tinks. I never heard that.
I've never heard of that one either.
Yep. Oh, no, trust me. If you're over on the Vineyard and it's like April and it's just, you know, it's April, March, and it's changing over from into spring, and of course the great question will be, you know, who's heard the first tinkle tink?
Jim, thanks for that. We're getting all kinds of things we haven't heard of before. All right, let's talk to Mary, who's calling from Provincetown. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mindy. I have a strange thing I've heard people from Connecticut do. They swallow their cheese, like instead of saying the word button, they say button.
Hmm.
Does this sound familiar to you?
I haven't noticed it, but I haven't lived in Connecticut for a really long time. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't really noticed that either, although I will say with a lot of pronunciation and accent things, a lot of it just depends on how much a person is enunciating versus how kind of quickly they're speaking. The survey, also the thing that I used to collect the data, relied on people self-reporting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would ask them how they pronounce this word. And oftentimes when you ask someone that, you know, they'll become very self-conscious about how they're speaking, and you won't always get the best data that you could. Whereas if you ask someone whether they say soda pop or Coke, they usually kind of know.
Yeah.
Which they say. So I found the data on the choices of various words to be a little bit more reliable than the data on pronunciation and accent.
Yeah. Mary, that was a good question. Thanks. And since you mentioned that, that's the map on the cover of the book, the soda, pop, Coke. But what I think is really interesting about that is if you look at who we say soda in the Northeast and soda in the Southwest. So it's like these two little opposite corners of the country and everybody else says something else.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, then, and Milwaukee and St.
Right,
Louis.
Right there in the middle. Yeah.
And then I know, again, outside Boston, you say tonic.
That's yeah. All right.
What I recently was that I was raised in the Boston area, and we said tonic.
Yeah.
Tonic, right. Yeah, which is just what you said.
And I think that's really obscure, actually. Yeah. Is it, or am I wrong?
Tonic. It is. It's very specific to the Boston area, and at least based on the latest data, it seems like it's sort of fading away. So it's not as common among younger speakers as it is among older speakers.
All right, let's talk to Irene, who's calling from somewhere on Cape Cod. Hi, Irene.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I love language, and this is so funny. The other one about when I moved here, I had a good friend who asked me if, when I first met her, if I wanted a tonic. And I thought, you okay? You know, to me, a tonic was something that you took to feel better.
Right.
The one that drives me crazy is I have a friend who I used to say A-U-N-T. Now, how would you say that?
Yeah, we covered that one, aunt versus aunt, yeah. And yeah, we
The same thing with C-A-N-T. No, it's aunt versus con and cont.
Right.
My aunt Louise said, you know, it's not aunt or... Anyway.
Yeah.
And the other is the gal that just called. There's so many people that do break their words, like, I'm going to do something, or I'm going to do something.
Right.
Something, you know. And even on CNN during all this political stuff, you know, a lot of the regionalization of their, you know, broadcasters or people that, you know, deliver the news, all their things would come through in spite of probably all the good training that they've had. But that the aunt and tant just sounds like so aloof. You know, I can't come because of what
Irene, thanks. Thanks for that. It's funny because I was in Paris, this was years ago, and the girl that worked at the front desk said, is the word 20 or 20? Because some people say 20 to her. She was very confused on whether it's 20 or 20. All right, Bert is giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Bert.
Hey, Mindy. How are you today?
Good.
Good. So I've got three things. Number one, first of all, I love this. I love language. I love the regional dialects from around the country. And one question I would have is, did you notice any patterns? And this falls back to a little bit one of the previous callers had said, did you notice any patterns in how different areas where different immigrants have settled, mm-hmm. how that has impacted the type of language that they use?
Yeah, that's a really good question because we, you know, had the Pennsylvania Dutch, the Swedes and Norwegian in the upper Midwest. So, Josh, what did you find about the culture influence in
Pennsylvania? Sure, yeah. I mean, immigration plays a huge role in the English that develops in a certain place. So you definitely see very strong influence of, like, which countries people are immigrating from really has a big effect. So you'll see a lot of the difference between the language in Philadelphia and the language in, say, Pittsburgh comes down to this influx of sort of Scotch-Irish immigrants into western Pennsylvania. And you can definitely see the influence of German immigration in Wisconsin and Minnesota, in that area. Immigration definitely plays a huge role.
Yeah, Bert, thanks for the phone call. Lindsay is giving us a call. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Mindy. It's Lindsay.
Oh, hi, Lindsay.
I love this show. It's great. In response, I haven't listened the whole time because I was driving to work, had to get to work, so I might have missed some things. In response to Isaac's call from Aquinnah, I thought it was interesting. A hurricane, I've often heard with older people on the vineyard spoken as a tempest or an August gale, which I think are wonderful signs. And that sort of has to do with ancient way of speaking. I know I personally say in the same tone, icebox for a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Icebox.
And tinfoil for whatever they call it. I call it. And, you know, I think also in the vineyard, which is, somebody might have brought this up, the genetic deaf community in Chilmark and Gay Head in the 1600s, 1700s, and, well, no, in the, yeah, 1700s, 1800s, and into the early part of the 1900s, a sign language was developed here on the vineyard that many people know about that was unique to the vineyard.
Yeah,
And I think that's another type of speech.
But. Yeah, exactly. And Josh, Lindsay Lee, she does a lot of oral histories on the vineyard. So, Lindsay, I'm sure you see a lot of these examples that we're giving today, especially the ones we're talking kind of an age difference versus younger people versus older people.
Right.
Say, yeah.
And people on the vineyard older people called frying pans spiders.
Spiders, huh?
Spiders.
Yeah, yeah. Lindsay, thanks for the call. Sam is giving us a call from East Sandwich. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I am also a refugee from South Jersey, and you guys are doing a great job.
Oh, yous guys, yeah, yeah.
I grew up in Atlantic City, and I got to say, in Atlantic City, it's mostly subs as opposed to hoagies.
Right.
Hoagies is considered a Philly thing. but the point... Hello?
Yeah, you're breaking up, Sam, but we got your point. Thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in Carol, who's calling from Pocasset. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
My husband and I are washing shorts. I'm from Iowa. He's originally from Michigan and then Iowa. And the first thing we had to do, he came home one day after we had moved here and said, we're saying the state wrong. The rest of the country says Massachusetts without the T's. We had to learn to say the T's at the end.
Mm.
And the other thing is the piece of furniture. We had to learn how to say sofa or couch.
Couch, right.
In Iowa, you say Davenport.
Oh, wow. Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah. Carol, thanks for that.
It goes on and on and on, but I also haven't heard the bag versus sack.
Oh.
Out there you would say, would you like a sack?
A sack instead of a bag. Yeah. Those are good ones. Carol, thanks for that. Was sofa versus couch in the book? I don't remember.
It wasn't, but that is definitely on the list
for the next one. All right. And we have an email that says D-R-A-W-E-R. How do you say it?
It's a drawer.
Drawer, yeah. Was that one that you looked at? Drawer versus, I don't know what the other pronunciation would be. And sometimes people have a tendency of adding letters, like idea versus idea.
Yeah, you'll hear that R kind of pop into a lot of words like that, like Washington, wash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we have another email who said, I'd like to know about the geographic range of people who say height instead of height and across instead of across. There's one that talk about adding letters. I first heard it when I worked out west, Texas and California. I sometimes hear it around here, but not as much. I also knew people from Texas who would say supposedly instead of supposedly.
Those are all great examples.
So what was one of the most surprising things that you learned after going through your survey data and creating the maps?
I think probably one of the most surprising things is another example of something that I always thought was universal that turned out wasn't, which is what I would call when it's raining and the sun is shining at the same time, I call sun shower. And I had always just assumed that everyone in the country would call it that also. And then it turns out most of the country doesn't have a word for it at all. And then in parts of the South, they call it the devil beating his wife.
You know what I thought was really interesting? There's one in here, and I don't remember where it was in the book, so I'm going to have it wrong. But it was, what do you call a drive-through liquor store?
Yeah.
And it was 77% or something like that of the country did not have a term for it. But the ones who did,
right. They
were pretty funny. Like, beer, was it beer brew? Or all of them seemed to refer to beer.
Yeah, so it was in different parts of Texas will have different words for it. You'll have a beer barn, a party barn, a brew through.
Yeah, those were funny.
Yeah, which you'll also find out in like the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Eastern Virginia.
Yeah, we have less than a minute. So your work at the New York Times has focused on finding patterns in data and turning them into stories. Have you seen some interesting patterns in recent data that you want to explore?
Some. I'm not really at liberty to talk about them yet. I'm hoping that it should be published over the next couple of weeks. I think it'll be fun.
Okay. Your title of the book is Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. Josh Katz, thanks so much for joining us. It's a lot of fun. We have to have you back again. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Jackson Chiappinelli for production assistance at the New York Times. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.